Coming to you live beneath the mines of Mandalore, it is the Hand Plus Podcast, where normally each week Tristan and I break down this week in streaming, but we decided, since Tristan couldn't record this week, I did a solo episode. Hey, let's do a special episode to talk about the premiere of The Mandalorian. I don't know what that means we're going to talk about next week, because we're going to say, hey, if you want to hear our thoughts on The Mandalorian, we did a special episode. So this is what this is. Just all this talk is this week is going to be us talking about Season 3, Episode 1, The Apostate of The Mandalorian, giving our thoughts, speculation, thoughts on reactions to it. Tristan, I just want you to give your letter grade. If you were a teacher and a student handed in the assignment of Season 3, Episode 1 of The Mandalorian, what are you giving it?
Look, I'm not sure how people respond to the episode, because I know we're going to talk about the general reactions, but I really, really liked this episode a lot. I'm going to go ahead and say my letter grade is going to be a B+.
Can I tell you what my letter grade was?
What did you give it, Joe?
I didn't really know what I was going to give it until I asked you, and I think before you even said your answer, I settled on a B+ as well. So, B+, that's what we give this episode.
Closer to an A than I thought it would be, you know? It's just nearly there.
Yeah, I think it's a fun episode. I know a lot of people online were saying, oh, it wasn't fun. It wasn't as good as the other season premieres. And I understand that. I honestly think the reason why it's not is because I think that means it's going to be a better season overall, where I think especially season one and season two were more adventure of the week. This was very much more like setting up a full adventure. And I don't know if necessarily this season is going to be as kind of adventure of the week as previous seasons were. I think this could be more of like one long story told over 8 parts, similar to what, I mean, Andor I think was broken up into chunks, but Obi-Wan was very much more just like one long story. It wasn't really individualized episodes, and I think that could be very much what this is.
Yeah, I'm curious to go forward, because this definitely did a lot of setup, and that was, I think, what, you know, you get to the end of the episode, and I feel like we have a really good idea of where Din and Grogu are going to be heading for the next half of the story, the next part of the season, and I feel like that's what the premiere should do. It didn't necessarily give us like a jaw-dropping moment of like, oh, look, here's a baby-sized Yoda, or here's Luke Skywalker, or anything like that, but it definitely set me on a course for a really, really good season. And as somebody who was down on the last season and is not super like in love with the show so far, this is honestly one of the better episodes of the show. I thought it was a really, really fun one, and I love like looking at all these new aliens they bring in. I feel like when we covered Andor, we complained a little bit about the fact that there was not a lot of aliens. It was all just kind of people in kind of alien-looking costumes, and this definitely brought back the aliens to Star Wars, whether it was hyperspace whales floating around and Grogu staring up and all at these purgles floating up above him, or is it going to be, you know, just practical aliens walking around in the background? I feel like this really, really felt like Star Wars in that way. It felt like a living world full of people and places and species that all had this history and all had these, you know, places to go and people to see. I like this a lot, and I thought it was a nice warm welcome back into this world of Star Wars, and a lot better than Book of Boba Fett was, and better than some of season two of Mandalorian was.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and I think a lot of people, like, people have been saying this whole time, we want aliens, we want aliens, we want aliens, going back to The Force Awakens, and now we're getting those aliens, especially the Anzalans, the Babu Frick species from episode 9. I see people like, oh, this episode was just filled with like member berries, like, hey, member Babu Frick. And I don't even think it is that. I think episode 9 was like, hey, here's this character, and now this species exists. And I think the Mandalorian is just like, well, if that species exists, we saw that species repair a droid, we need a droid repairing species, boom, there we go. Like, I don't think, if we see a Twi'lek, it's not necessarily like a reference to Hera or Cham Syndulla. If we see a human, no one's like, oh, that's a reference to Princess Leia and Han Solo. I think it's just, no, this species exists, so we're going to throw them in there.
Yeah, I think this did a good job of mixing it up, too, because there was species you recognized, and there was also a good mix of aliens I hadn't seen before in the backgrounds, too, and did a good job of introducing new aesthetics, but also, like, sure, it's kind of a member berry to episode 9, but can you really say it's a nostalgic throwback to a movie that came out, like, 3 years ago?
That general consensus is it was bad and no one liked, like, I mean, maybe Babu Frick was like the highlight, the one positive people talked, but it's not exactly like a big nostalgia trip to see a Babu Frick species.
Yeah, and I liked that scene a lot. I thought it was actually really funny to see Carl Weathers having to translate the language back and forth. And even when it became basic and you could hear what you could perfectly understand what he was saying, he was still kind of repeating the lines back to him. I thought it was really, really funny. It almost felt like a meta joke in the way that, like, in Star Wars, when an alien speaks in an alien language, they always got to have a character around to kind of, like, repeat back what they said for the audience. You know, it made me think of, like, Chewie and Han, and Chewie going, like, oh, and then Han saying, oh, I don't care what you smell. And, like, that's felt like a reference to that kind of dialogue where it's like, you need to have a character there to translate. And then even when it becomes obvious, he's still there translating. Yeah. I thought it was really funny, especially, like, the visual of it, you know. Din's like scrunched up in this tiny little hut, and Carl Weathers is like leaning in the tiny little door trying to yell into him. It was kind of very absurd and fun in the way that I think Star Wars can really be when it wants to be fun and goofy and spacey. I think this is a good way for them to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Do we want to talk about kind of the opening, I guess, and what it ties to the Book of Boba Fett, where they were just like, where for the most part, it was kind of a mix, because it's like he went back to the armorer to essentially get his mission reiterated for anyone who watched the Boba Fett or watched Book of Boba Fett, or I'm sorry, anyone who didn't watch Book of Boba Fett. But also when it came to Grogu, they really didn't explain that. They were just like, eh, it's a long story, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I
do you think they balanced it well, or do you think they didn't balance it well, or what are your thoughts on that?
I feel like in terms of restating Din's mission, they did a good job with it. You know, I don't even remember if that little like kryptonite thing from Mandalore was in Boba Fett or not, or if this is like the first time we've seen it. But I kind of remember that being like the thing he picked up at the in his one episode of Book of Boba Fett. But yeah, so in terms of continuing the story on, I think that definitely was perfectly fine. You know, but I think the biggest hurdle for this episode for me, and potentially for like this whole season, is going to be the fact that Grogu is just back now. And if you don't watch Book of Boba Fett, but even if you do, I feel like there's not a lot of consequence for him leaving. Like, he's just kind of back with Mando now and kind of doing the exact same thing they're doing before and behaving the exact same way he behaved before. There's a little tiny bit where he uses the Force to grab something in the office of Carl Weathers' character, and I was hoping that might be a hint to, like, you know, maybe Grogu's learned more than we realized when he was with Luke. But as of now, I feel like if we didn't watch Boba Fett, it almost feels like a cop-out where it's like somewhere in the off-season they decided to back out on a Luke storyline or something and then brought Grogu back and wrote it off in one line. You know, it feels to me, if I was just watching this show, I would be really, really shocked that Grogu just pops back up again. And if you're not paying attention to like every individual T of a line, you're not even going to know like why he's back or what happened. So I feel like I hope they can bring that back in the future of this season and kind of make it come around and actually mean something that Grogu left, and not just to the story, but to the characters. You know, I wanted to see what Din was like without his son around. I wanted to see what that looked like for his adventure. We never got to see any of that. But if I can just swallow that pill of Grogu just popping back up and waving to the camera, I thought it was a pretty great start to the season.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there is, like, I almost wish, at least if they were going to bring him back in Book of Boba Fett, they would have waited till the final episode to maybe do that. Or I remember in Book of Boba Fett, he gets the Mandalorian kind of chainmail and gives to Grogu. I almost wish he would have had it made and then he dropped Grogu off dropped it off for Grogu at the season finale. And then that's kind of when Luke gives Grogu the choice, and you don't know what choice Grogu makes until he potentially shows up at the end. But I think even if just those more couple episodes without Grogu, and we would have seen him where Din's like, okay, well, this is my life now that I don't have Grogu, probably would have led to that. And obviously, like, Jon Favreau has also talked about all this time has passed, and sometimes you can feel it, especially with Navarro, where you see it in season one, and it's like this run down, abandoned, trashy looking place. In season two, it's kind of being built up a little bit, and then in season three, it's this big flourishing city. And I would say that's partially like the one big overall problem with the show, is that they don't really show well how much time has passed. I almost wish, like, at the beginning, like, certain times during episodes, like, I remember I think it was in season one, the episode that Bryce Dallas Howard directed where he like, lived in that town, and it's the first episode where we meet Cara Dune, and he lives in this village. Like, I almost would have wished, or would have been fine if they put, like, a thing at the bottom of the screen that said, like, 4 months later or 5 months later, to show that they've been living in that village for a while, and like you kind of get that sense, but you don't really know, okay, have they been living in this village for like 3 weeks, or have they been living in this village for 6 months?
Yeah, I do think there's a good amount of stuff that they could have filled in here, like even just the practicality of like, okay, all these characters are like on a ship together, and how do they get off of that ship? You know, like Din Djarin had the Darksaber. Why didn't Bo-Katan like say something to him in that moment they were together on the ship? And you talk about Giancarlo Esposito's character getting tried for his crimes. That could have been a cool scene to see. A nice cap off to the character could have been a cold open this season of him being put on trial by the New Republic. And I feel like there's just a little bit of bumps in the road here where it feels like not just the obvious of Cara Dune being gone for outside reasons. It feels like they had a bit of a shuffle going on. And especially if you don't watch Boba Fett, it feels like coming back to a show that had some weird off-season changes or something like that, because it feels a little bit jumbled when they come back here and they're just trying to write off major characters and a couple of lines and big plot points and like a couple of words. So I'm hoping that those are just the bumps of a first episode, and now that we're getting going, I'm not going to feel that as much.
All right, my question for you, that I kind of had the realization this afternoon of going back and remembering, like, before season one came out, they were going into production on season two. And so they kind of had season two planned out and written out before season one started. And I especially think with the effects that they had to do for Luke Skywalker, like they were pretty much locked in before season one came out. They were pretty much locked in on the script and the plot and everything for season two. Do you think part of this is them being like, oh shit, we actually get to make more of these. Like we actually get to continue this story, because Disney Plus, they launched this show with Disney Plus. No one had any idea if Disney Plus crashed and burned and nothing, you know, it didn't get the subscribers they needed and it was done within a year. Like, the story just would have ended. Like, they hand Grogu off to Luke, but then obviously season one is massively successful and it's almost like the biggest thing, biggest Star Wars thing since the first movie. Do you think that's when they're like, oh, we didn't think when we started this, when we wrote season two, that we actually get to make more of these? And Grogu and Din is the story, so we're just going to kind of bring Grogu back and keep it going.
Yeah, I think part of that might be that, and I think part of it, too, is that they didn't expect the show to be so popular. Maybe what was going to be like a 3 or 4 season project is now going to be like a 6 or 7 season project, and they have a bit more story to tell with Grogu and Din, so they're trying to hit the brakes on that a little bit. And now we have this idea of Din's going to shower in the Mines of Mandalore or whatever, and he's going to... Maybe that's going to be the whole kind of tangent for this entire season, where we're going to have some time with them to grow together and build up what the next threat's going to be. Because you wonder if in a different reality where this show is popular but not like the biggest thing in the world, that maybe they have 1 or 2 seasons left and then they kind of come back and finish it there.
Yeah, because I know Jon Favreau's come out and said basically like, we're just going to keep making it. You know, we don't really have an end in sight, which... people hate on, some people don't mind. To me, this is basically like how Jon Favreau works. Like, he went on to make Iron Man and they were basically writing the script as they went. I think ultimately they have some level of planning, because before season 3 came out, they had season 4 written. So they have some level of direction and everything. It's not exactly completely. And I assume if he has season 4 written, he already has season 5, at least in his mind, like pretty much has a general vibe of where it's going to go and what it's going to be about. So I don't think necessarily just because, and like season two, it could have been the ending of the story, and then we can figure out what happened to Grogu in a comic and then have the adventures of Din Djarin be another comic series or something. But overall, the main story of Din and Grogu ended in season two. And with this type of show, I really don't think you need like a big ending planned out, because you can kind of just figure out an ending to end whenever you want. It can just Din retires and goes off and rides off into the sunset, and boom, there's your ending. Grogu is now living amongst the Mandalorian as Din lives alone in the desert.
I think it is good to have like touch points for your characters. Do you think like, okay, where do we want to see Grogu and Din like 4 years into their relationship? You know, what are kind of some points you want to eventually reach for these characters? And I feel like I'm sure they have those in mind. Yeah. You know, they have an idea for what they want to do with Grogu, what his whole mystery is, what his origin is, those kind of things. And I think with a show like this, you don't necessarily have to have, like, here's the whole entire bullet point plan of everything we're going to do in the show, as much as you have to have, like, the arc you're working on planned out, you know? I would feel concerned if he was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with this Mandalore arc, you know, maybe Din's going to go back, I don't know, we're kind of just figuring it out. I'd be like, you're just figuring it out right now, the arc that's happening. But it sounds like they have this storyline figured out, but an actual ending for the show, they're not really thinking about that right now. So I'm okay with that, but I do hope they have a picture in their head a little bit of where they want to see this thing go, even if they don't have the bullet points mapped out exactly.
See if I have another. What was your, like, what was your all-time favorite moment of the episode? Like, what was your big, like, this is why I watched this show?
My favorite moment was almost like a twofer, but the one for me was the nice Western standoff we got with Carl Weathers and that cocky pirate. You know, I was kind of hoping we'd have a Hondo appearance when he talked about pirates, and they walked up. I was like, oh.
When they said there's pirates outside, I perked up a little bit. I think there's a chance we may get a Hondo. Based on nothing, I mean, Hondo is the host of Galaxy's Edge, and I think maybe they're dealing with all these pirates. I think there's a chance that Din is sent to Galaxy's Edge. Do you think there's any chance they were able to film, like, something at, like, Disney World? Point the camera in a certain direction. You can't obviously go one way or the other, but cover up a lot of the obvious, like, Disney marketing stuff. Like, okay, don't show the Mickey Mouse ears, but ultimately, like, oh, yeah, we went one time at night after it closed, and we filmed the scene at Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a Batuu appearance in one of these shows. I think this show is the perfect place for it. It'd be a great place for, you know, Din to show up for an episode or two and pop off again, and he is there. You know, if you're talking about Galaxy's Edge, Grogu and Din are walking around at Galaxy's Edge right now, so if you want to be technical about it, I feel like they do say that Galaxy's Edge is like canon to Star Wars, so maybe they're trying to say that Din and Grogu do at some point go there for even just like a little tiny getaway mission.
Yeah,
that would be kind of an interesting way to do it. But yeah, I love those pirates. I thought it was a really fun space battle too when he was getting in that battle in the asteroid belt. You don't see a ton of that in these shows. You know, that's something that we've seen a few times in the movies, but it was awesome to see that type of battle. And you could really track everything. It wasn't like just a bunch of chaos. You could figure out where Din was and where the pirates were and what he was trying to do and how many were left and where he was going. And then you get that kind of like jaw drop where he goes around and you realize the big scale of the threat and everything like that. I thought it was a great, fun sequence. And then to have the pirate captain show up, I believe you said his name was Gordian Shard.
Gordian Shard. That was my moment, is the appearance of Gordian Shard. It was like weird. It was crazy. It's very much like Pirates of the Caribbean inspired, and I saw some people use that as a negative, and I'm like, y'all people watch the wrong movies as kids, because I love the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Hondo, especially with that level of like Pirates of the Caribbean-ness of that character, he felt very much like Davy Jones in that way, that with Hondo being pretty much a Jack Sparrow ripoff, it makes me even more curious to see if we see Hondo appear in this season.
Yeah, I had a blast with Gordian Shard and the look of him, you know, because you expect him to just look like the rest of the pirates, you know, and then he shows up and he's like a swamp thing, and he has his like cool practical costume and the red eyes and everything. I was like, okay, this is why I watch Star Wars. You know, this had a great throwing of all these aliens and all these creatures and all that kind of stuff, and I really got the great Star Wars vibes from that aspect of the episode. You know, it was so much about the creatures and the aliens, and that was something that I think is very much in George Lucas's wheelhouse back in the classic Star Wars era. So sure, this, you know, doesn't necessarily advance the plot in super meaningful ways. It doesn't give you any kind of jaw-dropping crazy moment, but I love being back in the Star Wars world, and I love seeing all these aliens walking around, seeing this world feel so alive. And yeah, Navarro, I love the way Navarro turned and changed. You know, I think it's a great setting of the table, and yeah, I can't complain about aliens and pirates battling it out in space. You know, that's pretty awesome to me.
Yeah, I looked up who voiced Pirate King Gordian Shard because I was curious. He's not like a super known actor, but his name is Nanzo Anoze. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, he played one of the guys from, I believe, Karth that was in the kind of Daenerys storyline. It was probably around season 3 or 4-ish, if I had to make my guess of when he was in the story. If you watch Game of Thrones and you Google Nanzo, N-O-N-S-O, Anoze, A-N-O-Z-I-E. You'll definitely recognize him. So I thought that was kind of cool and interesting. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about is, like, the title of the apostate. Because if you look at these titles, especially for The Mandalorian, a lot of them have, like, double or triple meanings in a way. So I was just going to pull up. I had it Googled here. Give me 1 second. The definition for an apostate. So a apostate is a person who renounces a religious or political belief or principle, and that's as a noun, and then as an adjective, it's just abandoning a religious or political belief or principle. And I think for the most part, there were, I would say, if I had to guess, there were three people you could call as the apostate in, well, four people, actually, you could call the apostate in this episode. Obviously, Din, he was the one that's called the apostate. He left the Mandalorian Order. You also have Greef Karga, who is a guy, he used to be kind of a low-life guy. He used to be in with the pirates. He used to be committing crimes, and now he's this high-level, like, hey, I'm trying to help my people here. I'm trying to make my city actually good, and kind of left that life behind, and you could say he's an apostate of the kind of underworld. You also, to a certain extent, have Bo-Katan, who the man, whether, I mean, in her eyes, I think a lot of the Mandalorians around her are apostates. But to a certain extent, when all the Mandalorians are like, you know, you're not the ruler we thought you could be. You had the Darksaber, but not anymore. And they all left her. To a certain extent, she's an apostate of the Mandalorian ways. And then the fourth one is Grogu, who's an apostate of the Jedi religion, who left to go be a Mandalorian with his daddy.
Yeah, I like it. I didn't think about all those levels of meanings. I was definitely thinking about Din and thinking about Bo-Katan and thinking about, I can never remember Carl Weathers' character's name, but
Greef Karga.
Greef Karga. Yeah, they definitely both fit that meaning, but Grogu, of course, fits as well. I like that they do those multiple meanings of the titles, you know, and I think Mandalorian itself is referring to more than one person. I think there's a lot of people here who would call themselves the Mandalorian, the one that knows it all. They're the two prime Mandalorian, but I feel like this season is trying to break that title down and be like, what it means to be Mandalorian is more complicated than we initially thought that it was. And I think, yeah, I definitely think Bo-Katan's character is in an interesting place where she's lost everything she built up. She's just kind of lounging on this throne with not really a care in the world, but she's kind of bitter. You know, she has this resentment towards Din and blames him for the fact that she lost all of this stuff. And I'm curious your thoughts on the characterization there of Bo-Katan, because I'm not totally sure that fits with the character that I know, and I'm not totally sure that's like an interesting direction for the character, but I'm wondering what her role is going to be in this plot going forward. She says goodbye to Din like she's ready to let go and never see him again, like he's going to die on this quest. But I have a feeling Kate Sackhoff is not in for one scene on this season. So where do you think she's going?
Well, if you notice in the closing credits, they have all of the kind of main recurring, basically the main cast in the credits. And then they'll do also starring at the end. And she was in the main part of the credits. So I think she's essentially a series cast member. She's not a reoccurring. So I would say she's more likely to appear in every episode than never see her again, is my prediction. There's probably going to be one or two that she's missing from, but I would say for the most part, she's going to be in every episode. As far as her characterization, I feel like she's just lost so much. Obviously, spoiler alert, her sister dying, all of, you know, she had the Darksaber at one point, thought, hey, I'm going to reunify Mandalore, I'm going to take it back, everything's going to be good. And then they didn't really respect her because she was just gifted the Darksaber. Mandalore fell even more apart. Even the people who directly followed her don't follow her anymore, and they became bounty hunters and mercenaries. And she's just all alone with really, in a way, nothing to live for. So I feel like her just kind of being down and out and depressed makes sense for anybody in her situation.
Yeah, I'm curious what her role is going to be in the plot and how her character is going to change, because as of right now, this episode made me feel like Greef Karga is all of a sudden my favorite character on the show, and that maybe Bo-Katan is like the worst character on the show. Because
I think ultimately, if I had to guess, her arc in this show, and with Din and Grogu being the main character, is I think Din's going to find purpose, potentially, in reunifying Mandalore or becoming the Mandalore. And I think, ultimately, that's going to ignite Bo-Katan to care again, ultimately.
Do you think Bo-Katan's going to have, like, an antagonistic role for this season? Is she going to end up confronting Din and being, like, the one that holds him back? And or is she going to be, ultimately, an ally for throughout most of the season?
I think her character, if I had to guess, would be like slightly complex, and there's going to be a bit of jealousy, but I think overall I think they're moving her, obviously, when she was in the Clone Wars. Those first couple episodes, she was an antagonist, but since then, she's been an ally. Like, she's friends with Ahsoka and this, that. So I think, ultimately, she's going to be a good person. So I think she's going to be a little bit jealous that Din has the Darksaber, and that people are slowly going to follow him. Like, you look at him throughout the show, he hasn't even had the Darksaber. He hasn't been an official leader, but he's gotten, like, Greef Karga on his side. He got Queel in season one on his side. Like, he's very good at getting people on his side and getting people to help him. Pelimoto will help him. So I think it's probably going to be the same with the Mandalorians, especially when he has the Darksaber. And so I think it's going to be a little bit of jealousy, but ultimately she realizes, I had my shot, it didn't work out, it's you know, his turn now, and she's going to help him out.
I think that's generally where Arc is going to be, because I think she'll be pretty antagonistic throughout this season. She could even have a couple of, like, fights against Din, I could see, and some battles for control. And then I ultimately do think her arc is going to be joining him and finding her new place, maybe not as the leader of Mandalore, but as some kind of other role in that leadership. You know, she sees herself as, like, essentially the queen, you know, that should be in charge of everything. And I wonder if her arc is going to be realizing she's not that, but she still can have a valuable position and still, like, fulfill her purpose, you know?
She could have, like, the Mandalorian equivalent of, like, the Hand of the King kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Of, like, hey, you have the leadership ability that I kind of lacked. I have the Mandalore history, like, the real Mandalore history that you lack. And so you can lead, and then I can just advise, because I actually know things that you don't, because you were raised by crazy cult people.
And I think she has, like, a tactical knowledge too, you know. She's like a military leader. I Din's a good fighter, but I don't necessarily see him being someone who's going to go and map out commands for armies and things like that, you know. I have another question for you, Joe. Din's proposed his mission. Now he's going to go shower in the waters beneath the mines of Mandalore. He's totally sure they're there. He's totally sure Mandalore is fine. Is he really going to shower, Joe? the rains come down in Mandalore.
I think if you watch this show, and just seeing so many things on Reddit, I'm like, do you people watch the show? Do you understand this show? It's like, his job was to deliver Grogu to his people. And in a way, he succeeded, because in time, in the trying to deliver Din to his people, Din became his people, you know? So it's like, it's very much like they teach in script writing class, like want versus need. And obviously, at the beginning, the need was, or the want was for Din to return Grogu to Grogu's home. But obviously, over time, the need never, the want never changed, but the need or whatever. People get what I'm saying. The where home was changed, essentially, from to his species, to other Force users, to Din. And I think ultimately, the want or need, whatever, is to basically be seen as a Mandalorian again, to be seen and respected as a Mandalorian again. And his want is to go and bathe in the waters of Mandalore. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, we've seen shots of Mandalore and it's green and vibrant. My guess, obviously, it's going to be fine. Mandalore, maybe because people haven't been on it in a while, or maybe because cult leaders and stuff lied to everybody. Mandalore is habitable. And I think when he shows up to a place with a bunch of Mandalorians, and maybe there's people living on Mandalore now, right? We don't know. We haven't been there in a while. Maybe there's people, and he shows up with a Darksaber, and everyone's like, oh, he's our leader. And he realizes, like, oh, these people who aren't crazy cult leaders see me as a Mandalorian. And not only do they see me as a Mandalorian, they see me as the leader of Mandalore. So I think he will accomplish his goal, but I'm going to say he doesn't end up bathing it in the waters, because he's still seen as a Mandalorian.
I'm thinking they're going to subvert that in a way, too. You know, I think, of course, his internal goal is to be approved as a true Mandalorian. And I think he's going to get there. There's going to be mines, but there's not going to be any, you know, any showers, any rains. You know, I will not bless the rains down to Mandalore. Mm-hmm. I do not think that it will be any showers. I think it's going to be like a metaphorical shower, though. I could see this being some kind of way where it's like, okay, it's not a literal shower, but something showers upon Din where it's like kind of, if you squint at it, a little bit true. I feel like Star Wars does that with their prophecies and about their ancient sayings. You know, it's like they're the chosen one, kind of, you know, and it's from a certain point of view, I didn't lie, those type of things. I could see it being like, you know, maybe something rains down upon him, maybe rocks or maybe like some kind of water source rains upon him, and you're like, oh, he kind of showered in the minds of Mandalore. So maybe it's kind of true, you know? Right. I can see them doing something like that.
All right.
A metaphorical shower.
So if I remember correctly, because you're saying shower, but if I remember correctly, the actual word is bathe. It's bathe in the waters. What if there's like some animal there, creature there, or maybe some crazy, like we thought Children of the Watch were crazy. These people are like crazy, crazy Mandalorians, and they attack him, and he's in the mines, and there's no water, and he's like, what the? And then he gets attacked, and so he has a darksaber, and he's just slicing, and then he gets covered in blood, so now he's bathed in blood, and then that's like, he's like, this counts. He's basically like, this counts. And maybe. And maybe whatever that creature being thing was that he attacks is what's been keeping people away from Mandalore. And now he's like the one that he has the darksaber. He's made it so people can live on Mandalore again. And then that's what turns him to be seen as a true Mandalorian.
Yeah, I think I have two predictions now. I think he has, when you mentioned finding people on Mandalore, that kind of inspired something that would be fun. What if he meets them and rather than seeing the darksaber and they say, oh my God, you're our leader, they see the darksaber and they're terrified. They're like, oh my God, you know, last time the darksaber was here, it destroyed our whole planet, so now we got to defeat you. We got to make sure this darksaber never comes back to Mandalore because we don't want it here. It destroyed our entire planet, and look at it now. I think that could be a fun subversion.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like that.
And my second prediction is one that has slipped my brain, that I don't remember what I was going to say anymore.
So do you think that's going to be like the final thing of the season, is him going to the mines of Mandalore?
I definitely think they're going to build up to that. I could see it being like the penultimate episode, you know, right before the finale. You think it's kind of the finale, the plot, and then he gets there and there's no bathing to be had. He's kind of defeated and he's really ready to give up on his journey. And then something kind of re-inspires him and brings him back to the fold. But I do have one prediction in that relating back to Nevarro, and I think it kind of will tie into Mandalore in a way, because we've seen Mandalore kind of get sieged and destroyed by the Empire and just kind of like glass and flattened. And I think it builds up Nevarro for all these seasons. And now it's really kind of become this thriving thing. And you can feel Greef Karga wanting to hold on to that success. And he's kind of like doing anything he can to stop it from collapsing. And I think it's really, really going to hurt when Thrawn shows up and just completely destroys Nevarro, wipes that planet off the galaxy, you know, just glasses that planet.
No, I can't. I don't want to think about those thoughts. That's why would you do that to me?
See, that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, wow, Thrawn's gonna come here and he's gonna flatten this thing. All of that build up, you know, it's just gonna come crashing down. How you feeling about that prediction, Joe?
Yeah, probably what's gonna happen. I don't think it's gonna be this season. I think it could be somewhere, maybe Mandalorian season 4, because I fully believe, especially we haven't even talked the Purrgil, the space whales. The Purrgil, they appeared. I think that was to let people know. I think that was to, like, A, to let fans know, hey, Purrgil, they're a thing.
Great, great moment.
But obviously,
I love a Purrgil.
There's a lot of people that don't watch Rebels. I think they're going to be a thing that slightly was there to just lodge in people who don't know Rebels' mind of what's that. Because I think they're going to appear later. And I think that's what's going to, like, spark Ahsoka or, like, give Ahsoka a way to get to Ezra and Thrawn, and I fully believe Thrawn is going to be the big finale shot. Like, that's going to be the final shot of the season. Because I think at some point, especially if Bo-Katan's a major player this season, and obviously there's probably going to be a big battle, Bo-Katan's going to call up Ahsoka and be like, we need your help. And then maybe the Purrgil somehow come into play somehow, and then she's like, alright, like, I need to go get Thrawn, I need to go get Ezra, and then cut, and they're like, do you have any idea where Thrawn is? And she's like, no, but, you know, I think I have a way to find him. And then cut to Grand Admiral Thrawn, the reveal in live action.
Yeah, I definitely think they're building up to Thrawn as the big shared baddie here. And yeah,
the Thanos of the Mandoverse.
I definitely feel that. Yeah, the Purrgils, they played a great, huge role at the end of Rebels that was kind of really significant to the plot and to the way that show ended. I don't want to spoil anything because I think that show is great, and I think if you're liking this show, you should definitely go back and check out Rebels. This honestly felt like the most like Rebels or Clone Wars that these shows have felt in a while. Yeah. So if you liked this and you like kind of the alien side of it and the mystical teasing of it, I think you'll like Rebels a lot, because Rebels, to me, is some of the best Star Wars out there, and this episode made me want to go back and like watch the whole show again.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was, like, the special effects. To me, you know, especially with Boba Fett and with Kenobi and stuff, there were moments where you could very much, like, see the volume. Like, you could almost see, like, the pixels and stuff. But honestly, with this episode, there was one shot where I could be like, oh, I can tell they're in the volume. Every other shot, it looked like they could have been on location. I don't really know. And the only time was there was a shot where Greef Karga was talking, and you could really only see his head and upper shoulders. And, like, the back, just something about it seemed off. Like, the background behind him, something. But other than that, I thought it was, like, seamless, flawless. So what were your thoughts on, like, that and just the special effects overall, whether it's the makeup or any, even the space battle effects?
Yeah, I think the special effects and the general, like, production value has been what's held back these shows, especially Boba Fett and Obi-Wan. I thought, really, really, you could see the seams badly in that. And then Andor came along and showed us what these shows can actually look like, or they can actually be like a production value, a person behind the camera that like is picking the shots to make them look good, actually, and not just kind of setting up the camera where they think it might be good. I think this was a huge step up, though. This was really, really great effects, honestly, especially the aliens and the mix of practical and CGI. It really helped to fill in the world. I feel like that's something that a lot of these, not just on these TV shows, but honestly, like in some blockbuster level movies, like some of the Marvel movies, I feel like they don't really fill in the crowds really well with their effects. It's just kind of like these faceless CGI kind of people in the background, and this kind of really felt like an alive world. They're really full, and I think it helps that a lot of these shots are kind of tight. A lot of interior shots are like really small locations, you know, like town squares and that kind of thing. They're not really demanding like a big huge scale action. But even like the giant crocodile thing at the beginning, it might not have been like the most creative enemy to fight in your opening sequence of your season that you built up for 2 years, and you're gonna say, let's have these random characters fight like a giant alligator at the beginning, you know? But I think it looked good. The CGI looked really good for the alligator and the flying around Mandalorians, you know? So it was a nice, good action sequence. And yeah, I was really impressed by the production value overall here. And I hope that this is a sign that this season will get things back on track, and that the pandemic stuff and all of those limitations are kind of lifting a little bit. So maybe they're able to really nail the visuals and the style of this show, because that's something that I think Star Wars is so... Something that's so important about Star Wars is the aesthetic, you know, and the way that that first movie looks like nothing else around it. And they really kind of sweat the details on Star Wars movies. Even in the prequels, it felt like he was really sweating the details of the places he was creating. And I've missed that. So I'm hoping that this is a step back in the right direction.
Yeah, hopefully this isn't like, oh, we stepped up the budget for the premiere or anything like that. And want to take a stab at the species name for that giant crocodile gator thing?
I'm going to say it was a Gatoro.
It was a dinosaur turtle. That's the official species name, is a dinosaur.
Dinosaur turtle, that's somehow better, you know? Yeah. Where's the shell? You know, dinosaur turtle.
It had like a weird looking back. Maybe it's like a soft leather. But there was a kid at the beginning who was having his initiation ceremony. Some people at first thought it was a flashback, but I was like, there's no way they're casting that pale ass kid as baby Din Djarin, baby Pedro Pascal. Supposedly, that character is supposed to be Paz Vizsla's character, the character that Jon Favreau voices, son. The actor, do you know his claim to fame?
I couldn't have told you anything. Didn't recognize him from nothing.
Well, his name is Wesley Kimmel. He is the nephew of Jimmy Kimmel. And he was also, this isn't his first time appearing in The Mandalorian. If you remember, or the book of, he was actually, this is his first time appearing in The Mandalorian, not his first appearance in Star Wars. He actually appeared in the Book of Boba Fett. There was a Tusken, do you remember the Tusken Raider child? He played the Tusken Raider child as well, so.
Interesting. Yeah, nepotism is alive and well, Joe, you know?
Nepo baby's crushing it.
Look, you know, if you're going to fill a little role like this, why not give it to some kid who's like, you know, maybe Jimmy Kimmel calls up the office and is like, hey, you know, my nephew really wants to be in this Star Wars. Can you put him in there with the... He said he wants to play a Tusken, whatever that is.
Yep. And apparently the character's name is Ragnar.
That's a good Star Wars name. Yep. Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel, he's got the ABC ties, you know. I could see it working.
Yeah. Do you have any... Oh, one other thing. We were talking about Navarro and... you know, we talked about predictions and stuff, and obviously, Cara Dune, who is supposed to be the Marshal of Navarro, not going to be around anymore.
No, not sticking around.
They shipped her off and just said, oh, she's got recruited by Special Forces. Do you have a prediction for who will be the Marshal of Navarro by the end of the season? Because I have an idea.
My first thought goes to Timothy. Well, what is that guy's name now? Timothy Oliphant's character. Cobb Vanth. I love that guy. Honestly, I thought he was really cool. He was a great character in the Aftermath books. He's a little tiny, tiny character, and then I thought he was really fun when he showed up on The Mandalorian. And I could see him coming back. That'd be a great role for him. But that might be a little too easy, honestly. I feel like they got to go somewhere different. I could see it being IG-11, revived IG-11. You got to bring back Taika Waititi, give him the badge. You know, let him walk around as a marshal.
Let's just say I've read leaks. Don't expect a lot from IG-11. I'll say that.
Dang. Oh, well.
So I have a theory based on nothing except Rick Famuyiwa directed the premiere. He's also directing the final two episodes. He also has directed two previous episodes. And one actor has appeared in both of them, and that's Bill Burr. And I think there's a chance that, you know, I assume there's got to be a big fight. There's always a big fight at the end of these seasons. They got to go around recruiting people. Somehow they link back up with Bill Burr's character again, Mayfeld. And I don't believe Greef Karga has met Mayfeld yet. I could be wrong. I think maybe Mayfeld or Greef Karga sees Mayfeld, sees he's capable, sees he's handy, and he's basically like, hey, you know, I'm looking for a marshal. If you're looking for honest work, steady work, you could be my marshal. And one of the benefits of being a marshal, because obviously Mayfeld is currently on the run and changed his name, is they could make up something of, like, if you're the Marshal of Navarro, you can't be arrested by the New Republic unless I give the okay. And I could see, I think that'd be kind of fun. And Bill Burr also seems like the type of guy who'd want to hang around Carl Weathers. So
yeah, and it'd be a nice arc for the character. You know, he would come back to kind of this role of authority, you know. And yeah, Bill Burr is a fun actor to stick around, have him pop up for a couple episodes. You know, he gave, I think, the best scene of last season, you know, so why not bring him back for a couple more scenes?
Yeah, he was at the premiere in Los Angeles as well, so.
I'm looking forward to next week. I looked up the director, and her name is Rachel Morrison. I was not familiar with her at all, but then I saw there was a connection. She is actually Rick Fukumawa's DP for a lot of his movies. She shot Dope. She also shot Mudbound, which is a great movie. She shot Black Panther, which looked really good. So I'm curious to see what her direction is. She shot Fruitvale Station. You know, she's worked with Ryan Coogler a lot. So I'm curious to see what her aesthetic is. She hasn't directed a ton of stuff. She's done a few TV shows, you know. So that's when you talk about, like, the budget step down between episode one and episode two. You think, oh, are they had a big kind of recognizable movie director doing the first episode. Are they going to kind of step down with this TV director? But I don't think so. When you look at her actual list of works, you know, it's a very prolific cinematographer, award-nominated, award-winner cinematographer. So, yeah, definitely I'm looking forward to how this next episode looks when they're bringing on someone with that level of a track record.
All right. Do you know anything about the people directing this season?
I have not looked up the list.
Right. I was going to break it down for you right now. But go for it. Obviously, we have Rachel Morrison directing the next episode. The third episode is being directed by Lee Isaac Chung. Does that name mean anything to you?
It does not mean much to me.
They directed a little movie you may have heard of called Minari, which was a big indie favorite last year, I believe.
Of course, that's a great pick. I like that pick a lot.
All right, the fourth episode is being directed obviously by Carl Weathers. You know, so he's directed. I think he directed an episode last season. So
it was a good episode last season too. It was a lot like a really fun, like a Star Tours kind of like thrill ride.
Yeah, and he said before, like, this is another, like, action-heavy episode, so I'm excited for that. Does the name Peter Ramsey mean anything to you?
Peter Ramsey, I do know his connection to Into the Spider-Verse, I want to say.
Yeah, he was one of the co-directors to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. He's directing episode 5.
He's also directing Ahsoka, I'm like seeing as I click on his name. So yeah, he's got some episodes in Ahsoka.
And then Bryce Dallas Howard is directing episode 6. She's directed some of my favorite episodes of the show. And then episode 7 and 8, directed by Rick Famuyiwa again. So they got some great options. Like, the one who has, like, the least track record, the one that I would be, like, most concerned about, I guess, is Rachel Morrison. And everything coming out of the, because they debuted episode 1 and 2 at the Los Angeles premiere. Everything coming out of that episode was like, this episode's amazing, this episode's great. So I'm really not concerned about it, but like, of those directors, she'd be the one that I'd be like most concerned about, and obviously I shouldn't be. So I think we're gonna have some great episodes, at least direction wise this season.
Yeah, when I look at this lineup, I start to kind of want to predict of what's gonna happen here based on the directors. And when I see Lee Isaac Chung and I see it as a connection to Ahsoka, I wonder if episode 3 might have an Ahsoka appearance. Yeah. You know, I start putting the piece together like that. Bryce Dallas Howard, she directed the return of Bo-Katan. I wonder if her episode 6 is going to be like a Bo-Katan heavy episode. That could be, we're talking about her like turn back to glory. That could be her episode. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the season, Joe. I liked season 1 and 2, but I was not in love with it, and I really hated Boba Fett. So I came into this season and I was like, this is going to be a rough one. I'm nervous here, but I'm really, really excited. I'm more excited about this show than I've probably ever been for this show. So I can't wait to see what the season brings us. And yeah, the directing lineup makes me even more excited, you know. But I also really like the idea that Rick Fumayawa is coming back for the ending too, because he's kind of going to be able to like wrap together the season he started.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how things are moving forward. Do you have any, so spoiler, I kind of know a little bit because I looked at reactions, I looked at things from people who saw the second episode. Do you have any predictions specifically for next episode of what we might see, what might happen?
I'm not quite sure, because this season did set up a bunch of directions for him to go, because he wants to kind of get this piece for IG-11. I'm wondering if he's going to like commit to that for an episode to go kind of hunt down this piece, but because I didn't expect him to just go to Mandalore like next week. You know, I think there's going to be kind of a bit of, look, Joe can't even keep a straight face when I said that. So maybe he will go to Mandalore next week and it'll be kind of a big action episode. Who knows? I do think it's going to be more action-oriented. I think it might give us a bit more to chew on and talk about, because we had to talk about this week. I mean, we talked a lot about this episode, but I also felt like plot-wise, it didn't feel like it was necessarily forwarding a lot or introducing a lot of new things. It was just kind of like getting the ball rolling for the season, you know? Yeah. So I'm thinking this is their chance to give us something exciting and something cool, and maybe show us Mandalore, even if it's in like the last scene. Maybe we finally get Din like arriving at Mandalore by the end of the next episode. We could see like the struggle of him getting there. And
you
then,
don't know why I'm laughing. I could be laughing because next week has nothing to do with anything.
Look, it could be anything. We could have a whole entire episode of Luke Skywalker like meditating and talking to Grogu and watching him age in real time.
One of the things I wanted to say, because we talked about like the growth of Grogu, of like him, like did him training with Luke mean anything? And there were moments that I wanted to bring up, because like I noticed things going back watching the last 3 episodes of Book of Boba Fett that I didn't really even notice the first time. Like the main lesson Luke was trying to teach Grogu was just to use the Force to jump, and he would jump, and you could basically barely slide a piece of paper under his feet is how short he was jumping. And then he's on the little rickshaw or whatever the hell it's called, with Pelimoto and Din, and he like jumps like 4 feet into the air in Din's arms, and like you noticed in this episode he pulled like the little like red candy thing to his hand. You'd also notice he was spinning around in that swivel chair, and there wasn't nobody pushing it. He was just using the Force to spin the swivel chair around. And like we see in the trailer, there's him. He just Force pushes this like big like creature out of the way. He uses the Force to calm the Rancor down in Book of Boba Fett. So I think he definitely, and like Luke said, I'm not even teaching him anything. I'm just reminding him of things he forgot. So I definitely think Grogu is very strong in the Force. And Den's not even controlling his little hover pod thing anymore. Grogu is the one that controls it. So I definitely think he did grow. They just don't really like go out of their way to show it or like say it, but he is more powerful in the Force than when he left.
I'm curious what Grogu's arc is, because they've been teasing like, oh, is he gonna go bad? Is he gonna use the dark side and turn evil? And like, I don't see any reality where they turn their biggest hit, cutest creature of all time into like an evil character by the end. So they might tease him with some dark side a little bit, but I don't think they're gonna go that direction. I did. In that scene, though, think about the prequels and how they had this running element of like using the Force casually for your own like benefit is not necessarily like a good thing. You know, when Anakin's kind of like cutting the fruits with his Force abilities and things like that, that seems like something that Yoda would have looked down on. You know, he says if you use the Force, when we need to, when it needs us to, and not when we're just kind of being lazy, you know. And I feel like between Grogu spinning this chair around, grabbing some food, and then the trailer we saw him kind of like force choking somebody, I wonder if he's going to have to learn like when to would not use the force. You know, what's a good time to tap in this energy? What's a bad time? I think that might be an arc for him this season of figuring out when he should and shouldn't use it, and then ultimately doing something badass and heroic in the towards the end of the season with the force and having some crazy force ability where he saves Din or something like that. I could see that being a kind of arc for him.
Yeah, so this is my ultimate prediction for Grogu based on just speculation and nothingness. Well, first off, there was the shot in the trailer that looks like the same planet, same background, same set as when we saw the initiation for that kid at the beginning. And there's a reason they showed that. And it was Din, and he had another Mandalorian next to him. And I think one of the things in the season finale, because I think this is going to be more closer to Game of Thrones probably, where the penultimate episode is the big action episode and the finale could potentially be kind of more of the epilogue and the more of like, okay, these are the repercussions of the big action thing. And one of those is we see Grogu's initiation into the Mandalorian ways, and we see his like ceremony, and I think at that point hopefully Din and Grogu learn like the full Children of the Watchway isn't the way, and I could see them, like, he has his helmet on for the ceremony, but maybe right before the ceremony started, he was, like, walking around without it, and he's like, oh, it's the ceremony time, I'm gonna put my helmet on. So that's my prediction, that Grogu ends the season as full Mandalorian, not really just a foundling that follows a Mandalorian around. And my prediction is Grogu, you know, whenever anyone comes close to hurting Din, Grogu, like, freaks out and hurts them. When he was arm wrestling Cara Dune, Grogu started force choking Cara Dune. I think ultimately my prediction is, like, the final moments of the Mandoverse, at least with Din Djarin in it, Din dies or becomes incapacitated, and Grogu is going to have to learn to basically stay focused, stay centered, and take out the person that took out Din potentially for the Darksaber, and Grogu is gonna wield the Darksaber. I think he's gonna grow a little bit by then. I think he might be actually like a bigger sized puppet, maybe able to talk and communicate, not be a full adult by then, but you can have like, okay, it's not just like a weird toddler throwing around a like saber where you're like, this is dangerous. You're looking at it like, no, okay, Grogu is the future of Mandalore.
I'm definitely curious. Like, because we talked about Grogu is going to become the Mandalorian. I feel like that's part of definitely something I predict too. And I'm curious how the show will balance all these different definitions of what it means to be Mandalorian. Like, are they going to say that Din's cult was right? Are they going to say that Bo-Katan is right? Are they going to say that Tar Vizsla was right? What are they going to do? Is Death Watch right for defining Mandalorian? Is Jango Fett and Boba Fett, were they the real Mandalorians? And I want to see how the show, I'm sure, is going to try and find like a middle ground where not one group is exactly correct. And I think that will be a lot of fun. Like, how do you define a Mandalorian? And I think that's why the show is called Mandalorian. I think that's part of all these characters' arcs, is they all think that they're the Mandalorian. They think they're the ones that know the way. This is the way. But the reality is that there's no specific exact way to do things, you know? And I think that's going to be something that Din has to learn throughout the season, is that maybe it's not about going and bathing in the showers underneath the mines of Mandalore. Maybe it's just about like being a good person and being a positive influence in the galaxy. And it's not about all these culty rituals that he has to follow. It's about using what you've learned and what you've been taught to help people, not to hide out on a little island and do rituals by yourselves. You got to actually be an active participant in the galaxy, especially now that we're going to start getting probably the rise of the First Order a little bit. Mm-hmm. As the season goes along, we're probably going to start seeing the darkness kind of rising back up to meet the light again, as you were told in The Force Awakens. So I think we're going to start seeing, similar to Bad Batch, where they're being inspired to say, okay, maybe there's like a real actual threat in the galaxy we got to fight against. Mm-hmm. I could see Din realizing that all these old ways, all these traditions, this is not the way. The way is to actually help society, not to hide out on our thrones and mope, not to hide out in our caves and meditate and pray. It's to actually use our abilities to help the galaxy, and I hope that's a good arc for him. I hope his arc is not realizing that his crazy cult is actually correct, and that extremism is good. You know, I don't think that's going to be the arc here, but you never know.
Yeah, do you think at some point he has the Darksaber and he's like, hey, maybe we shouldn't just be like alone on our planet and where I'm the king? It's more of like, hey, I'm in charge, and as the person in charge, I say we should be like spread out and just be helpful people in the galaxy. And it's about code and honor, and we just should go around operating with honor and being, you know, we're kind of the Jedi. Almost maybe he's like, hey, the Jedi, once he learns about the Jedi and could potentially learn why the Jedi fell, he could almost want to supplant them as, like, the protectors and everything of the galaxy. We're like, hey, there was this group of people that they had weapons, like I have this weapon, and they were here to help people and protect the galaxy. They failed. And I don't have mystical powers. This kid has mystical powers, but you don't necessarily need mystical powers if you're just, like, going out there with, you know, your honor and ability to fight and stand up for those who can't.
I think that's definitely a route, because that could be a way to bring in someone, even like Hondo, who has experience with Jedi and can tell him what it's like to actually like fight alongside and against the Jedi. Even Ahsoka, you know, she left the Jedi Order, and I think she could kind of inform him on what it was like and the bureaucracy of it and the flaws of that. So I definitely hope, I don't hope, but I think that's the direction it could go in. You know, I'm not saying I hope it goes any way or another way. I'm one of those fans that's like, it has to go the way I randomly predict her, it's bad, you know? Yeah, I just
randomly had an epiphany on a podcast. The only problem that sucks is, like, we don't see a single Mandalorian during the sequel trilogy. So it's like, whatever they do, either they're just seclude themselves on their planet, and that's kind of boring and sucks, or they really don't succeed very well in expanding and just becoming more a part, an active part of the galaxy, because we never see them.
Yeah, it depends on how far along they go on the show. It could easily be like, oh, they had something else going on, you know? If they're fighting Thrawn around the same time that Rey and Finn are doing their thing, like, I could see them being too busy, you know? They're not going to pause their battle. It'll be like, oh, hold up, Thrawn. We got to go fight with Rey real quick. Some random person that sent us a message, you know? We got to go join that fight.
Yeah, I could see that. Or maybe they're, like, the First Order's there and out there, and they're not, you know... And, I mean, there's so many ships in that Episode 9 battle that they could easily go back and retcon and say, like, 1,000 of them were Mandalorian ships, and it wouldn't really matter.
Yeah, they could easily go back and see, oh, look, there's Din Djarin's ship if you look really closely. We promise, it's in there.
And, weirdly enough, I know people talk crap about the Star Wars Special Editions, but once the Mandalorian's over, and also as the galaxy is shaped more, I wouldn't even be mad if they were just, like, edited in shots of, like, oh, there's, you know, just a quick 2-second shot of Grogu, like a, you know, middle-aged Grogu or teenage Grogu flying a ship.
Yeah, and I even think about, like, Return of the Jedi Special Edition, where, like, that scene where all the ships are taken off for the final battle, and they decided to edit in some prequel-era kind of ships in the background and make it seem like it's more of, like, a full thing. All these different ships are coming together. I could see... You don't even got to put Grogu. You just got to put, like, Din Djarin's ship in that big wide shot for a shot, you know, and that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. His little Grogu is flying the N1 Starfighter.
That'd be perfect. And, yeah, I definitely am looking forward to the season, Joe. This episode... You know, I was going in with hesitancy and slightly low expectations, but this exceeded all my expectations and all my hopes for the show, to be honest with you. I'm way more excited than I thought I was going to be going into this season. I thought I was going to be, like, drudging myself to the TV to be like, okay, I got to watch Mandalorian. It's the big show of the week. Joe's going to want to talk about it, but now I can't wait. I'm going to be up to 3 in the morning waiting to watch next week's episode.
Yeah, I just set my alarm for 3:05 every Wednesday, and then I have it set up where I'm going to watch Mandalorian at 3, and then on my way into work, and before I start work, I'm just going to watch Bad Batch. You need to catch up on Bad Batch.
I do. I'm thinking I'll do a binge at some point, but yeah, you know, a lot of Star Wars going on. A weird choice to make two Star Wars shows happening same time, same day, you know?
Yeah. I don't understand that logic, and I think that's part of what Bob Iger was talking about when he was talking about, like, the management and release of shows. I think he looked at Bad Batch and Mandalorian releasing on the same day and was like, what are we doing here? But I'm surprised they didn't move anything around, but there might have just been a point of, like, any that's so condensed that anything you move, it would have been on top of something else. So.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of delays, not just on the Disney Plus side, but on the Marvel Studios side in the next couple of weeks, I think. So, Yes, you know, maybe you don't delay something that's like already actively ready to come out, you know, like Bad Batch, but I definitely think they're going to space some stuff out, you know? Yeah. One thing I want to predict, I want to beg you, though, is that we please stop dropping movies at 3 a.m, you know? Can't we drop an episode like a normal time, like every other channel does? I'll, you know, drop it at like 9 p.m., 8 p.m.?
Yeah. That's it. Man, my boss, who's a big Star Wars fan, and he's, you know, watched, he didn't watch Boba Fett, because he's like, I don't really care about Boba Fett. And then I'm like, if you're going to watch The Mandalorian, you kind of need to watch the last 3 episodes of Boba Fett. And he was like, and he's, you know, not like us, where we go on, like, the Star Wars subreddit or see Star Wars Twitter. Like, he really doesn't have any social media like that. And so he's like, why didn't they send out an alert that they were like, hey, the last 3 episodes of Boba Fett are really just The Mandalorian? And I was like, don't ask me why they did it that way, but they did it that way. And I don't remember what my point was, but, oh, it's weird. Me and him were talking. We're basically, I don't know why they don't drop, like, why Disney Plus doesn't drop shows at 9 p.m. Eastern. That way it's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Everyone should mostly be home if they work a regular 9-to-5 job. They should be home if they work on the West Coast. They shouldn't quite be in bed yet if they work on the East Coast. And even so, even I'd be okay with 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Western, because it's like, if you really that, you know, really want to watch it, you can stay up and make sure you watch it. But I really have no understanding why for this type of show. I've heard it's because of, like, it keeps it on Twitter all day, where if you release it at night, it's going to be on Twitter, like, that evening, but that's kind of it. And so it doesn't spread the message as well, so that way people are going to watch it throughout the day, essentially, that Wednesday, and it keeps it a trending topic pretty much all day on all the social media platforms.
I also think there's a thought about not wanting to overload your servers. You know, like when they drop a finale and everyone's clicking the button at the exact same time, that's an easy way to crash Disney Plus. And then all of a sudden, instead of talking about the episode, you're talking about, oh, how shitty Disney Plus's servers are or whatever.
Yeah, that's potentially an option, but
I hope they change it, though. I don't like staying up there. Like, I don't like having to stay off Twitter all day because I know someone's going to tweet out some spoiler if I don't watch the episode. You know, I want to be able to watch it at a moment, too. Because I know we're going on long, but part of what I like about TV is, like, the shared community experience. Talking about it with you afterwards. Talking about it with fans afterwards. And I feel like when you drop something at 3 a.m. and people watch it when they get to it, sure, you're tweeting about it, but I don't necessarily feel like I'm conversing about it. It's like a shared experience if everyone's watching Mandalorian together at the same time and then getting on and talking about it afterwards. It's like,
yeah,
you talk about it when you see it, but it doesn't feel like a collective experience in the way that, like, The Last of Us or Game of Thrones did, you know?
Yeah, it would be nice if it was like a, hey. I mean, you don't want to be competing with anything else, so I'm fine if they want to keep it midweek, but just release it at a time where everyone can watch it at the same time.
That's what I would love to. Yeah. And, you know, for reactors and things like that, you think about those people having to stay up to 3 o'clock in the morning to film their Boba Fett reactions and do their breakdowns and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Luckily for some of them, they get screeners, so, you know, they get it like a day or two early, but, you know, that's their problem, not our problem. Our problem is I don't want to watch it at 3 a.m, because I've noticed that with Bad Batch, too. I'd start falling asleep. And then I'd go on Reddit, and they'd be talking about it, and I'd be like, I honestly don't even remember any of this. I must have gone through half the episode.
I'm glad I didn't watch this one at 3 a.m, because as soon as the Anzalan showed up, I immediately cheered. You know, it was, like, so happy. I would have woke my family up, you know? And then the space whales, too, I was like, you're giving everything I ever wanted, you know, in an episode.
All right. So I know enough. I don't want to make any predictions. What's your – do you have, like – even, like, I'll even throw it out to, like, a season prediction of, like, a character to show up. And I'm taking Hondo off the board. I'm taking Hondo and any character that's basically been announced to be in another show off the board. So no Ezra, no Thrawn, no Sabine. Any character that's been announced to be in another show, I'm taking off the board. Any character you'd like to see in the season of The Mandalorian?
I'm making a prediction based off of essentially not much, that we're finally, Joe, we talked about it how many years now, but we got to get the Crimson Dawn in this show somewhere. Even I wouldn't think they're going to be a big part of this season, but I could see that being something they set up like at the end of the season. You know, if it's not Thrawn necessarily, they could bring in someone and set up the fact that Crimson Dawn is kind of this group that's coming into to gather up some forces. I think Crimson Dawn's going to play a part in Bad Batch more so than in a Mandalorian. But if you're making me take off all these other characters, you know, at some point it's like they've announced or rumored just about every major character in Star Wars sub-media. You know, like everyone on Rebels is probably rumored to or confirmed to show up. Most of the big characters on Clone Wars, rumored or confirmed to show up.
I don't care about rumors. I'm just talking about the ones where, like, they've cast it. And the cast has been leaked, and we know they're appearing. At least in Ahsoka.
Yeah, because I was feeling Sabine. Honestly, for a second, thought our flashback, or it wasn't even a flashback, I thought the opening sequence was a flashback to, like, a young Sabine for a second when she was doing the helmet. Because it had almost, like, a Sabine look with the colors and stuff like that. So I was thinking for a second it might be a Sabine opening sequence, but... Yeah, I'm excited for it. Look, they're going to bring in characters. I'm sure we're going to see Boba Fett again. I'm sure we're going to see Ahsoka again. I'm sure we'll probably see Luke again. I think the only character we have left to not have seen in the DH form is Han Solo. So I think if you're going to bring in a big, big Star Wars character, the one that's left to bring in, I think, is a young Han. Especially when you're doing Indiana Jones, you probably have that file sitting around your computer of young Harrison Ford. Maybe you can just... uploaded that onto the Star Wars server and use that, you know.
So what do you think they do? Do you think they go DH route, or do you think they just call up Alden Ehrenreich and, like, put some makeup up on him to age him up?
I'd rather it was Alden Ehrenreich, because I think he's great in Solo, and it would be kind of like a fun confirmation of that movie, and especially to see him come back and, like, play the role for a while, you know. But I think if they're going to do, like, a one-time scene, they probably will DH Harrison Ford. If not DH someone that looks like Harrison Ford, looking like Harrison Ford.
Yeah, there's that actor, Anthony Gruber, who people wanted to play him in Solo, but he's not, like, the best actor. He's just very good at, like, a Harrison Ford impersonation. I think if you're going to do a one-off scene, I'd be fine. You put him, and then you face map basically your Indiana Jones file onto his face, and apparently he had a beard at this time, so that would definitely help, because you can throw a beard on Harrison Ford's face to cover up a lot of the problems, especially around the mouth. I don't know necessarily what he'd be doing.
That's the thing. I don't see a place for Han in this plot, you know, so it would be like a weird tangent to all of a sudden have Han show up.
I don't know necessarily what Han was doing. I know after Ben Solo turned to the dark side, he went back to, I think he was running a racing team at the time. I think that's what he was doing. I think he was running a racing team. And so potentially, you know, Din needs a motor for something. I could see him showing up. But at that point, like I talked about, I think at that point it would just be too much fan service. Where, like, character showed up, it made sense. Like, oh, Luke Skywalker was showing up. It's like, no, they needed the kid to be trained by a Jedi, and he's literally, like, the only Jedi alive. So it kind of made sense that it had to be Luke.
I think if you bring back Han Solo, don't bring him back this season, you know, because you just had the Luke Skywalker bomb drop last season. I don't feel like if you do the Han Solo this season, I feel like it loses impact, you know, because we just saw Luke. So now, oh, we see Han. That's also cool, I guess. But you bring Han in for like season 5 or something, I think that would be much more exciting, especially if we haven't seen some of the big three in a while. Maybe we might see Luke for like an episode here this season, but I don't expect Luke to be like popping up all the time on these shows necessarily.
And also, do we want to see the big three if it's all, like, their weird face map DH faces? You know, it just feels weird.
Look, I mean, they brought back weird face maps. Luke Skywalker had him hang up, but recasted Ahsoka Tano in the show called Book of Boba Fett, you know? And so I feel like they're definitely willing to bring any character together, whether it makes sense or not, you know? So why not reunite the big three, you know? Right. Maybe not in Mandalorian, but bring him into, like, Ahsoka. Bring him into anything, you know?
All right. What about Din's out on a mission somewhere, and you know, he's on some weird side quest, and Greef Karga, or maybe he contacts Greef Karga, and he's like, Greef Karga, I need your help. I need muscle. I need someone I can trust. And Greef's like, I got a little problem here. If you help me out, I'll help you out. And Din's like, what? And he's like, I need your help with a pirate problem. I got someone from the New Republic here, and the pirates are causing problems. They're making Navarro look bad. I'm trying to get Navarro money from the New Republic to help finish, you know, my dream of what I think Navarro can be. I need your help clearing out the pirates. And Din goes, and it's General Leia Organa is at Navarro, and basically Greef is just trying to make Navarro look good for General Leia.
That'd be a good cameo.
And I would be in a way that kind of makes sense, you know, her there as a representation of the as the New Republic.
Yeah, I think the fact that the New Republic is growing and Navarro is growing, I feel like Leia is a possibility to see come in as a representation of the New Republic. I feel like if you're going to bring Han Solo in, though, you got to combine it because I need a together. Han Solo. I need a Han and a Hondo interaction. We got to have Han and Hondo. Hondo getting on Han's nerves immediately. It's annoying Han instantaneously. Han does not like this guy. Hondo's getting pushing his buttons, enjoying the fact that he can piss off Han Solo, the big, great general of the New Republic. I feel like you got to get a moment where Han's trying to do a job, Hondo's getting in the way, and Din's there not wanting to deal with any of these hothead personalities. He just wants to get his plot device and get out, but he's got to deal with these both of these guys vibing for power, having a pissing contest. I think that would be a really fun character to interact, just not even because of the obvious name being almost exactly the same, but right. I feel like they have a fun vibe.
All right, I got your story. So he's got this super fast N1 starfighter, and he needs money quick for something to help rebuild Mandalore. He needs a lot of money. He hears typical thing. He hears about typical like sitcom almost plot. He hears about this big race where the winner of the race gets like 1,000,000 credits, and he's like, "That's more money than I've ever seen in my life. That'd be perfect." And he enters his race, and then turns out one of the other rival racing teams is coached by Han Solo, and another racing team is sponsored by Hondo's, because Hondo went legit. That's in a thing in Galaxy's Edge. Hondo's shipping company is sponsoring another racing team, so they're all there, and he's more, they're like kind of there, and they're not necessarily working together, but you just see them more as cameos in this racing episode where Din's got a race his N1 starfighter.
I feel like that makes sense. I think it would be really fun too if like Han cheats his way to victory and Din has to confront him. He's like, "You cheated," and he's like, "No, I just won against the rules, kid."
Yeah. And Hondo basically Din, and that you could also have it be a thing where he as a Mandalorian is trying to do it with honor, but he's very much clearly seeing that all of the other racers are cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And so he like basically is like, "If I lose this race, there is no Mandalore. But if I win this race, I have to do it dishonorably," and that kind of goes against the Mandalorian code.
There could be a way where his pod's falling apart at the last second. Grogu reaches up his hand, gives it a little bit of a force push. Fixes up that pod at the last second, pushes it across the finish line.
Yeah.
Din's like, "Maybe. Oh, I did it legit. I didn't have to cheat," and Grogu's like, "Sure you did. Sure you did,
Jin." We just wrote a great fucking Mandalorian episode.
Yeah, they gotta call us. We'll write every episode. Yep. Come on, John.
John Favreau. You can retire. We'll take it over. All right. Anything else you want to say about Mandalorian before we wrap it up?
Can't wait for next week. I'm really looking forward to what they do with this setup. Cool. Where does Jin go next? And yeah, I can't wait to see it up the action and everything like that. It should be a great second episode.
One very final thing. Do you notice who else got credits as acting in The Mandalorian?
Don't know what anything I should be knowing.
Lateef Crowder and Brendan Wayne, the two people who basically do the, are in the suit as the Mandalorian, because it's not really Pedro Pascal, because he's too busy filming Last of Us or other movies. He's pretty much just the voice. They were listed as actors for The Mandalorian and no longer listed as stunt performers.
That's awesome, because when you think about it, they are the people playing a lot of these scenes, and they bring a lot of the heart and the mannerisms to Mandalorian, so I'm glad that they're getting the credit they deserve. You see a lot of like great behind-the-scenes shots of them in the costume and that kind of stuff, and a lot of the most iconic scenes are them doing the acting, so I think it makes sense for them to be credited just as much as Pedro is.
Yeah, Lateef Crowder does a lot of like the physical, like jumping and stunts like that, and Brendan Wayne, who is the grandson of John Wayne, does a lot of the like gun stunts.
Yeah, I'm glad they got their credit, Joe. And right. I can't wait to see what they bring us in the rest of the season. Give us some great Din action stunts.
All right, so I think that brings us to our final thing. We usually only do this on our main show, but I thought, hey, we could do it for this random side episode. Who is your MVP, not of the week, but just of the episode of The Mandalorian?
I've got two nominations here, Joe. I'm trying to think of what direction I'm going to go. One is I think he brought love to both of our hearts, and that is Gorian Shard, the Pirate King, the Swamp Thing himself. I feel like he had a great, and it's like he had like a one shot, you know, and that one shot like boosted the episode up like an entire letter grade. So I feel like when you're talking about MVPs, you know, someone who comes in for one play and saves the game, that's a pretty good player right there, you know. Mm-hmm. And my second thought goes to Carl Weathers, because I feel like he killed the comedy timing in that scene, interacting with the Anzellans. I think they did a great job. And the way he plays it as like this really urgently important conversation, but it's like he's saying that it's just like the straightness of the comedy really played so well. And I think it comes through in Carl Weathers' performance and like that stand down he has, that like Western shootout, and then also the comedic timing. And also I feel like you get the performance from him of like someone who wants to hold this town together and wants it to be something you can believe in. So I'm voting for both of those. I feel like someone who actually like had a substantial role and was able to prove himself to be one of my favorite characters and maybe my favorite character like on the show right now. And then one guy who just showed up and looked really cool for one shot, and I hope he comes back for every episode of every Star Wars show ever from now on.
All right, so hopefully when I reveal my two nominees, it'll help us narrow it down. So my first nominee I had was a character named Pirate King Gorian Shard. Obviously, you listed all the reasons to love him. My other nominee was Carl Weathers as Reef Karga. So, I mean, obviously it's going to be one of those two. Trying to think, like, what do we value more? The guy who was there, and he was just laying one-liners. He's been there a while. This is the veteran on the team, and this is maybe the first time we're truly appreciating him. He's been there. He was averaging, like, 10, 15 points a game, and we just got used to him doing that. You know, he's been around. He was on previous teams that have scored won championships, and now he's on this winning team. Or do we value the guy who came off the bench, drained the game-winning three, and walked off the court?
I feel like we got to go with the guy who dropped the three. You know, Carl Weathers is going to be around for a while. He has a chance to win that trophy again, you know? Mm-hmm. And he seems like he's going to have a pretty prominent role within this season, and his planet's going to be pretty popular and talked about and part of the plot, you know? So if this is our only chance of ever giving Gorian Shard his trophy, I feel like we've got to go ahead and give him that trophy. You know, this could be our only shot, our only chance of seeing this legendary creature in his full strength, you know? So we got to give him that win.
All right, our MVP of the episode is Pirate King Gorian Shard, a species yet to be named. So can't wait for them to do something cool with that. Maybe they'll name him after like the guy who, well, what did, no, Alan Moore didn't create Swamp Thing, right?
I don't believe so.
He just had one of the more. Maybe they'll name, I hope they name it like something Swamp Thing related. Like how Obi-Wan's planet is named after Jon Stewart just because Jon Stewart asked George Lucas what Obi-Wan's home planet is named. So, have you heard that story?
I have not, but that's a good story.
Yeah, so they were like at a panel somewhere that Jon Stewart was hosting, and Jon Stewart, just a Star Wars fan, asked George Lucas like during the panel, what is Obi-Wan's home planet? And George Lucas on the spot was just like, well, since you asked, Stu John, and ever since then, Stu John is the official home planet of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's awesome. You know, we gotta get a good one in there.
All right, so I think that wraps up our show for the day. Normally, I'd end this episode asking Tristan a lot of random, crazy question, and I'm gonna do it again. let me think of one real quick. Oh, if you could name a director to come in and direct an episode of Mandalorian.
The easy answer is so easy, but I've been wanting this since the day the show was announced. Joe, you already know where I'm going with this
one. Rian Johnson.
Look, Rian Johnson, I know that's a good runner-up, but this episode, for me, felt like the most George Lucas Star Wars has felt in so long. And I think it'll be awesome for the finale of Mandalorian. You bring in George Lucas. You say, you know what, man? Here you go. Shoot another Star Wars hour. Give us something awesome. This could be your end cap. Make it cool. Make it Lucas. Give us some aliens. Give us some corny dialogue. That's what I'm here for. George Lucas, please. Please come back.
Yeah, I know last season, like, they kind of announced some of the people directing, but they didn't really say anything beyond that. Like, there wasn't, like, okay, this guy's directing episode one, this guy's directing episode two. And there was, I think, 8 episodes and 7 directors announced. And so everyone was like, who's directing that final episode. I was convinced it was either going to be Rian Johnson or George Lucas was directing the finale, and it was going to be a banger finale, and the final thing was just going to be directed by George Lucas or directed by Rian Johnson. And then it turned out it was just Peyton Reed, and Peyton Reed directed both episodes, which is why there was 7 directors for 8 episodes. But I think it would be great if they didn't announce it in an episode after just being a banger, was like directed by Rian Johnson or directed by George Lucas.
Yeah, and I feel like if there's anything George Lucas will come back in for, it's probably this. It seems like he enjoyed being on the set. He has some like positive feelings towards the show, much more so than the movies and the direction Disney took the franchise. I think he's really bitter about that, but I think he could have some positive feelings towards Mandalorian. I can see it happening.
Yeah, Filoni said in an interview, him and he consults George Lucas a lot, so I wouldn't be surprised if George Lucas has pretty much read all of the scripts for The Mandalorian before they come out to give his input.
I love it. I hope he does, Joe. I hope he does.
All right, so I think that wraps up our show. Finally, without further ado, goodbye.